Thanks for listening to the Best of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weeknight from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern, 7 to 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every night on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon on Fox Sports Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Aaron Torres, Arnie Spanier, in for Jason Smith and his best friend, Mike Harmon. A busy Friday night. How you doing tonight, Torres?
Arnie Spanier, I'm doing great, my friend. How are you doing?
You know, technically, I could change that up. Technically, we're filling in for Colin Coward, right? Because Gottlieb filled in for Coward. Jason Smith and Mike Harmon filled in for Gottlieb. And we're filling in for Jason Smith and Mike Harmon. So technically, we're kind of filling in for Colin, are we not?
6 degrees of radio separation there, yes. I don't know if our paycheck will be any different and similar to what the big boy there does, but I guess you could say that. Yeah, I hadn't really thought about it in that way.
It makes me feel better about myself. I mean, look, they're never going to let us work before 6 p.m. Eastern as long as I got you around. They'll never put us up early.
Excuse you. Wait a second now.
What?
I'm America's favorite fill-in co-host. I've filled in many times with Rob Parker and Chris Broussard on The Odd Couple. We've won many Marconi Awards for that show. I have filled in for Doug Gottlieb. They told me I did a great job.
Wait a minute,
when I say they, I meant America, but go ahead.
It's because of me? We can't fill in any earlier? Not because of you?
I mean, you're working tonight. You and I are working our normal shift, 11 to 2 a.m. Eastern tomorrow. And then what are you doing Sunday night, Arnie? Oh, you're working the late shift.
Yeah, but I want to fill in for Colin.
You are filling in for Colin. You just said you're filling in for Colin.
Yeah, but really filling for Colin someday. I think they're afraid to put me in for Colin, that I may wipe out his whole audience in just like 1 hour that he's built up for the last 20 years.
I think that is very fair, yes. I think they're saying that Colin is very successful, and Arnie, he's successful in his own way. He's successful in his own way.
We do have a lot to get to. 4 hour bonanza, so 3 hours, the power hour, the bonus hour, as we fill in for Jason Smith and his best friend, Mike Harmon. I don't know why they couldn't do double duty. I'll tell you this off the bat. Bucky Brooks, NFL media analyst, also co-host on Fox Sports Saturday. He does the show with Jonas Knox, some guy named Jonas Knox. But he's going to come on at 20 past the hour. Got a lot to ask him about the schedule coming out. But right off the bat, you know, now the schedule's out, kind of the aftermath. I'm up here in Vermont where we carry all the Patriot games. We're 5 months away from the games. And people can't stop talking about when Tampa Bay comes to New England to take on the Patriots. Ticket prices are going to go through the roof. They're already about $2,000. If you want a good seat, they're $12,000. We're only three and a half hours from the stadium. People chomping at the bit to try to get tickets to this game. It's the most sought-after game, other than the Super Bowl, in a long, long time. My prediction will be the highest-rated regular season game you're ever going to see, Torres. I'm already pumped up about it, you know?
Well, what I would say just in general is that I don't think that anybody in sports does anything better than the NFL at creating excitement in the offseason. I mean, think about really not even just the Patriots Bucks, but what has been the last 3, 4, 5 months. We had, even when, as much as we love NBA regular season, March Madness, I love college hoops personally, but even when all that was going on, it was the backdrop of NFL trades. Matt Stafford goes here. Carson Wentz goes there. What's going to happen to Jimmy Garoppolo? Right into the
Aaron Rodgers,
the NFL draft. I mean, normally the combine itself takes up 3 or 4 days, and now the NFL schedule gets released 4 or 5 days ago, and we're still talking about it today.
The funny part is we already knew the schedule.
Sure.
We just didn't know the days, and they already leaked it out like the morning of it when it was supposed to come out, Torres, you know?
No, it speaks to how much people in this country love the NFL. And to answer your question, yes, the headliner is Bucks Patriots. I am so excited. Cannot wait. Brady versus Belichick. And I'll tell you this, I think it'll be so interesting just in general. Even, obviously, look, Brady versus Belichick's going to be the headline. But where is New England by week 4? Is Cam Newton starting? Is Mac Jones starting? Are the Patriots in a tough spot having to play the Saints and the Dolphins early in the season? I mean, if they come in that game 1-2, fall in 1-3, imagine what kind of conversations we'll be having about Bill Belichick at that point. So the Patriots are one of the more fascinating teams just in general this offseason. And playing Tom Brady and the Bucs in week four makes it that much better.
I saw that Colin and a lot of the experts are all picking over 9 games or 9 wins for the New England Patriots. I'm like one of the few think it's going to be a total miserable year for them. I think it's going to be like a 5-12 season for the Patriots. I don't know where everybody's seeing this over 9. I wish I had $1 million to bet on the under because I don't think it's going to be a good year at all. I think the Bills and the Dolphins have a strong hold on that 1-2 in the division. And by the way, the Patriots offensively are not very good. It's going to be quite a struggle this year. I don't know where people are getting off thinking it's going to be over 9 wins for Bill Belichick and the squad.
See, and I'm with you because the Dolphins are a vastly improving team. We will see if Tua is the long-term answer there. But those are two tough games in the division. We know how good the Bills are. You have the Bucs. You have the Cowboys. You have the Chargers, which is a team that everybody likes going into next year. You have the Browns coming off a playoff berth. You have the Titans coming off a playoff berth. You have the Colts. You go on and on and on down the list. I don't see where all those wins are coming from, and I don't see what the rapid, vast improvement was. I know they made some moves in free agency. I know we like Mac Jones in the bigger picture, but the idea that they're just going to flip a switch because Bill Belichick is the head coach, I'm with you, Arnie. I don't see it at all.
All right, and this is important because I already know where you're going to be on the side of this because you're always on the wrong side when we talk about
something. Oh, okay, like excuse you, but go ahead.
Well, you like to cheer for everybody. You know what I mean? You're a millennial. You're
what? Cheering.
Yeah, you're a millennial.
I don't cheer for
everybody.
You. I boo you every time we go to commercial break. But anyway.
Well, that's fine because this is what I wanted to say. I have no problem when the game starts, Tom Brady comes out of that tunnel, that you give him a standing ovation. But after that, you got to come with the boos like it's going out of style. Were we arguing about one baseball player that hit a home run and you're like, oh, that's great. Everybody's cheering.
Whoa.
I'm like, what's wrong with you?
No. I was on your side, and America was mad at us. For people who will not remember this story, on our Saturday show, it was probably about, it must have been 2 summers ago, because there was no fans in the stands last year.
Okay.
But Albert Pujols, former Los Angeles Angel.
That's right. That's
returned to St. Louis to face the Cardinals. He hits a home run, and they gave him a standing ovation. I said, what are you doing?
Now, I know it's a little bit of a different story with Brady, because Brady was kind of, he was forced out, and we understand that. And I know you love him, and I know you want to go see him play, and I have no problem with you saying standing ovation when he comes out of that tunnel before the game starts warming up. You give him all the love you want. But once they start the introductions and they start that game, I don't want to hear, Tom, I love you. Tom, we wish you were back. Tom this, Tom that. He should be public enemy number one. I don't want to see everybody cheering him every time he does something great, you know?
Let me play devil's advocate, and I am not being Mr. Millennial that cheers for everybody.
Yes.
But what if, as I said a minute ago, the Patriots, which are coming off a very disappointing 7-9 season, and they were good at the beginning of the year, they weren't even good down the stretch. They open with the Dolphins, Jets, Saints, Bucks.
Right.
Bucks
right.
is week four. If, let's say, the Patriots lose to the Dolphins and the Saints, Bucks week four, they come in 1-2. They get blown out because Bill Belichick refused to get weapons around Tom Brady and Gronk's running this route and maybe Antonio Brown, whatever. Mike Evans, whoever. I bring this up to say, should you be booing Tom Brady? Or under the scenario that I have been presenting, or that I have presented, excuse me, should you be booing Bill Belichick? Tom Brady didn't want to leave New England. He was kind of forced out the door. You and I were on Saturday night when he threw that pick six to end his time against the Tennessee Titans. And I understand a pick six is on the quarterback, but he didn't have very much help. So I'm with you in that this shouldn't be a Brady love fest. But how can you boo the man when he didn't want to leave?
No, he didn't want to leave. And I understand that part, but he's still on the other team. You don't cheer for players on the other team when the game starts. It's that simple.
But
I know how much you love him. I know that he was forced out. I know he should still be there. I know that Tom Sr. loves taking shots at Belichick.
Sure.
And can't stop talking, which I love that about Tom Sr. I think that's great that he's sticking up for his son. But there's a lot. Let me tell you something. You look at the ticket prices now. $12,000 for a 50-yard line seat. We're 5 months away from the game. What do you think it's going to be? If you had tickets for four, you can get almost $50,000. It will be double that It'll be 100,000 by the time the game starts in about 5 months. That is going to be one hot ticket, except for Super Bowls. I don't think you're going to see a ticket any hotter. They're, like I said, they're going crazy here already, and we're only May 14th, and the game's in September. It's insane, and people can't wait for that game. Like I said, it's the most highly anticipated regular season game ever, I think, you know?
I agree, but so you never really kind of answered my comment, though, is – yes, you should boo Brady because he's on the other team and you got to support your team.
Yeah.
But if he does lead them to a convincing win and the organization is continuing to trend in the wrong direction, they may be 3-0 coming into that game, the New England Patriots.
Well, you're not going to boo Brady if he's kicking your butt. That's got nothing to do with it. You're going to boo Belichick.
That's what I'm saying.
For putting a crappy team out there. And let me tell you one more thing. If you think the Patriots are going to go through another season like they had last year or worse, I don't see Belichick doing that too many more years after that. He'll retire before he starts going through losing season after losing season because his legacy is going to get tarnished as every year goes by, Aaron.
Absolutely. I'm with you, and that is why that game is fascinating because, look, what were we talking about at this time last year when there were no sports? We were talking a lot of NFL and who's going to win the divorce, Brady or Belichick? Well, Brady's if it's a 100-meter sprint, Brady's got about a 50-yard lead on him with 50 yards to go. And so I'm only bringing this up, but first of all, I agree with you. How long does Bill Belichick stick around if things do not go as planned this year? I'm just fascinated. Listen, that is the headliner game. It is a headliner, and it is interesting for all the reasons you laid out. I just think the story of the Patriots, what happens, how good do they have to be, what if they miss the playoffs, what if they go 7-10, obviously there's 17 regular season games this year, what if they go 8-9, whatever. Bill Belichick was the master. He could do no wrong. He won whatever it was, 12 games with Matt Castle, 11 games with Matt Castle. He won with Jimmy Garoppolo for a few games. He won with Jacoby Brissett. Well, all of a sudden, we're starting to realize we thought, oh, it's plug and play. It isn't Brady, it's Belichick. Anyone could do well, not anyone can do that. And so to me, just in the broader picture, I just think the Patriots in general with Bill Belichick are one of the more fascinating stories going into this upcoming NFL season because the cloak is a little bit off, and I think Belichick, he has, frankly, something to prove this year.
I got him 5-12. Matter of fact, one scheduling flaw that the Patriots will have, they'll face three teams coming off the bye week this year.
Yes, I saw that.
Which means 0-3, my friend. You could guarantee you that. They better win early because they're not winning late. And the way that offense is going to look, I don't see it taking too long before they're getting Mac Jones in the game. Matter of fact, I wouldn't be surprised if Mac Jones started the game against Tampa and got his lumps in there because they may be sitting 0-3 if they lose to the Jets by then, you know?
So let me ask you, because I was a little bit away and I haven't heard what everyone's saying, what is the argument that they will go over the projected win total this year? Because I don't see it either.
I don't see it either. I guess a lot of what they've done in the free agency, which they spent more money now than they had done combined in the last couple of years, thinking that that's going to plug up a lot of holes. They were making excuses for Cam Newton because he was in the COVID, and he was in the COVID fog, so he's going to be 100% this year. Obviously, a lot of injuries last year, but every team went through injuries.
Yes.
So they're thinking all this added up is going to, you know, add a 10-7 year for the Patriots.
Yeah, I just look at it, and to me, I think it's easy to say, oh, bounce back, but they can't be worse than they were last year. But what I don't understand what makes you feel confident. I know they have made moves in the offseason. I know they have made moves in free agency. I do find it interesting, by the way. All in the lead up to the draft, all I heard was about how terrible Mac Jones was and how could he go number three. Now he's the savior of the Patriots. Yeah. Which one is it? Because you were telling me 2 weeks ago, how could he possibly go number three? He's terrible. He's a second-day pick. And now all of a sudden, he's the Patriots' savior. It's funny how all that works.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
I want to get right to our guest, lead NBA writer and manager at Pro Basketball Talk. You could tweet him at Basketball Talk. It's Kurt Heelan. Kurt, the Clippers are going to lose to the Rockets of all teams. I know Kawhi not playing, Paul George not playing. Did it not make a difference if the Clippers lose? It's like they wanted to lose, so they have no way to match up against the Lakers in the first round. What's going on here?
The Clippers have frustrated me all season. It's like earlier in the week, people were asking, I'm talking to people around the league a lot, actually, just because I'm trying to get opinions on on award ballot, and I'm like, they're like, well, who are you picking going to pick to come out of the playoffs in the West? I'm like, I don't know. And I'm like, maybe right now if I had to choose one team, I'd take the field over them, but I'd probably choose the Clippers. They're playing the best. They've got all this talent. And even without their guys, they do nights like this, and you're like, I watched part of that game, I'm like, I don't know that this team is right. Yeah, I just don't know. I feel like I'm betting on the wrong horse, which I'll do tomorrow plenty. But like, you know, yeah. I feel like I guess it's a good thing. For the first time in a long time, we go into the playoffs like, there's no way somebody's catching the Durant Warriors or LeBron in Miami or whatever it is. I genuinely don't know who's coming out of these conferences.
You just took the words right out of my mouth, Kurt. How many teams do you think legitimately can win an NBA title in this year?
Six. I know that there's people who will say more, but I kind of think the number's six. I think in the West, it's Utah and the two Los Angeles teams. I'm not a believer in Phoenix yet. Just they haven't been there. They haven't done it. And I don't mean Chris Paul and them. I mean, Devin Booker's actually never been in a playoff game. DeAndre Ayton's never been in a playoff game. I believe that there is a rite of passage kind of in the NBA about learning how to win in the postseason. And you can take that from team to team. LeBron can bring that to the Lakers, but somebody has to earn that. And I just don't think they have yet. And Denver without Jamal Murray, I don't think they're going to be able to handle it. And the East, it's one of the big three. So I think it's one of those six it comes away with the title. But I mean, this late in the season, we were normally talking about, well, it's these three, and it's never six. So it's going to be fascinating.
What's going on with LeBron? He said he's never going to be 100%. Is he just going to sit out the last two games to get every bit of rest in with Anthony Davis? Is he still hurt? Did he come back a little too early and tweak something up here? I don't know what's going on with him anymore.
I think he might have come back a little early. I think, look, we all know this just from us having done it on the playground, right? Like, or playground games or other sports. Ankle sprains are one of those things where you think you're okay.
Yeah.
Then you get back out there and you make a cut and you're like, no, okay, well, that was a mistake. But it's just not all the way back yet. You come back. I think there was a little of that. He started to get soreness. He missed a few games. Look, here's what I'm hearing. He and Anthony Davis will both be on the court tomorrow night. Lakers are trying to get a little bit of chemistry in. And as long as – look, if they win out – then it puts pressure on Portland to win their last game on Sunday, or the Lakers can get out of the play-in. So
yeah.
They have motive to actually show up and play tomorrow, and they're playing the Pacers team that's been awful, and then I say they're awful, and they've actually won a couple of nice games lately. So, you know, we'll see.
Kurt, you just mentioned a minute ago the idea that there is kind of a rite of passage where you have to kind of go through the hardships, maybe at least as an individual, if not as a team. And you also said that, but you also said on the flip side that you believe that both Philly and Utah, which would be the one seeds if the playoffs started today, you believe can win the championship. Now, to be clear, you didn't say they will. But so where are you on the spectrum with those two specifically? Because I look at them, I love the individual talent, but both of these teams lost in the first round of the playoffs last year. Collectively, as a group, they haven't won a ton. Where do you stand on those two teams that should be potential number one seeds?
Yeah, I think that both of them have they're going to have to overcome a little bit of experience, but they have been in tough play. You know, Utah's been against Denver last year. They've been in tough playoff series before that. So I give them some credit there. It's not just brand new to them. Denver, well, I mean, let's start with Philadelphia. What Philadelphia's advantage is, first off, they get the one seed. They're going to be playing – Miami's playing a lot better, maybe, or whoever they're going to get in the second round. Miami's probably the biggest threat. They have played better and, you know, and beat them the other night. But you get a lesser team. You let Milwaukee and Brooklyn beat each other up on the other side of the bracket, right? Let them go six or seven hard games and then roll out. And the other advantage they have is that nobody in the East has an answer for Joel Embiid. And Joel Embiid has been so good when healthy this year. The idea is that he'll be able to carry that over and you'll be able to run the offense through him enough. So I think that that's the chance. I think that they're on the right side of the bracket and things can break for them that way. With Utah, this is a really good ensemble team. And it's really tough for ensemble teams to win where you don't – look, if you've got LeBron James or Kawhi Leonard or Kevin Durant or Steph Curry, you know what? If your fifth best player has an off night, so what? You know, it just doesn't matter. Like, those guys will own you. and just it opens so many other things up. Utah's not that, with all due respect to Donovan Mitchell, Utah's not that team. They need every, you know, Joe Ingles has to click. Jordan Clarkson has to click. Everything's got to come together most nights, and they have some versatility. And that said, this is a really good, disciplined three-point shooting team that knows what it wants to do, that adds, with Mike Conley, some offensive versatility now. And remember, they have Bogdanovich back this year. They didn't have him last year. I think they're capable. I think a lot of things have to go right for them. They're a little more like, you know, the year Dallas won the title or Miami making the finals last year, where they probably need a few more things to break their way, but they're capable.
Kurt, I have my John Starks jersey on and my Walt Frazier Puma shoes on. I'm going down the Manhattan.
You don't have Walt Frazier's throw, by the way.
I'm going down the Manhattan for the Knicks championship parade. Look, they're not going to win it, but they've been a lot of fun this year.
Oh my God,
really hope. I want Brooklyn in the first round. If we're going to not win it, let's just go up against Brooklyn and do it. I want to see them in the first round.
Oh, that would be fun.
Yes.
That would be so much fun. The Knicks have been not only just a great story, but this is the first time in a long time where you're like, not only are they good, but they are sustainably going forward good. Like what they did this year wasn't flukish. They can defend now. They've got Julius Randle took a leap forward, and he is going to win Most Improved Player, and he's probably going to end up on an all-NBA team. All the NBA is just, as always, it's just brutal when you get to the third team, but probably ends up on an all-NBA team. You feel like they, you know, with Quickly and RJ Barrett and all these guys, you feel like, and draft picks come up, you feel like they can take a step forward. They got cap space. Like, this is a team on the rise, and it's just great to see. It's great to see the energy in New York, and it's just one of those things. I think it's, as great as the Nets are and as much talent as they have, and let's be honest, they stand a very legitimate chance of winning this whole thing this year. The energy the Knicks bring to New York is just different. Like, that's the only other – I'm trying to think. It's like in Los Angeles, it's like you can – the Clippers are phenomenal, and they don't – it's a Laker town. It's And I think New York is a Knicks town, man, and it is buzzing.
So, Kurt, real quick before we let you go, I actually want to follow up on that and just ask a real dumb question. For people that do not follow the NBA on a day-to-day basis, you mentioned Julius Randle. What has happened this year? Is it strictly a Tibbs thing? Because I'll open the floor to you, but it's not often that year six, year seven, whatever it is for Julius Randle, a guy makes a jump like he did this year.
You hit the nail on the head. He's 26. Guys don't make – by the time they're 24, 25, when they've been in the league about 5 years, you kind of know who they are. And guys get marginally better each year or work on a part of their game, but people don't make this kind of leap. What clicked for him, on top of playing better defense, what really clicked is his outside shooting, his jump shot and three-point shot, it just started working. And it just started going in, and it's not like he didn't put in reps before or something, but for whatever reason, he jumped from 29% from three last year to 41, 42%. I didn't look today at what he's at, but over 40% this year. Well, then that opens everything up. Now you've got to come out on him, and Julius Randle's always been able to put the ball on the floor. He is a bully going inside. And the other thing that happened is now that you have to come out on him and he could drive, and they've got some guys around him, he's a good playmaker. His passing skills, his ability to create offense for others is better than expected. And Tibbs, to his credit, where he gets credit in this, is he looked at his offense and said, well, I guess we're running everything through Randle. He's our best player. Like, he's the best guy, but Randle took that on and thrived in that role where far better than expected.
Yeah, no doubt about that. He's Kurt Helin, lead NBA writer and manager at Pro Basketball Talk. You can tweet him at Basketball Talk. Kurt, thanks for staying up with us. Enjoy. We'll catch up with you later on.
I look forward to it, guys.
Kurt Helin, everybody. Lead NBA writer. I knew I liked that guy, and manager at Pro Basketball Talk.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.
Hey, this is Jason McIntyre. Join me every weekday morning on my podcast, Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. This isn't your typical sports pod pushing the same tired narratives down your throat every day. Straight Fire gives you honest opinions on all the biggest sports headlines, accurate stats to help you win big at the sports book, and all the best guests. Do yourself a favor and listen to Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
By the way, we went 3 hours. We were contractually obligated by the bosses to bring up Tim Tebow's name.
I've heard the name, yes.
Yes. By the way, I can't believe so many people are bent out of shape about this 1 year contract when you have to make the team. You don't automatically get the money and get to be on the team. You got to make the team. I don't even know what it is. I used to think he's not going to make the team. Now I'm thinking maybe it's a 50-50 chance. Heck, if I know if he's going to do it, I think they'll give him every chance to be in it. But I can't believe so many people are bent out of shape that this guy's getting a chance, you know?
I am 100% with you. I don't understand. And what I would say is a few things. First of all, we need to remember that this isn't a guaranteed roster spot. Nobody's saying he's going to line up opposite Trevor Lawrence on the first play of the season.
Right.
It is just a shot to get a spot on the roster. He's a professional athlete. We all agreed 4, 5, 6 years ago that he could be an NFL tight end if he was committed to it.
Yeah, somebody's like, he's not even that great of an athlete. Look what he did at quarterback. I go, he won the Heisman. You got to be a pretty good athlete to be. I get the Heisman, don't you?
He led the Broncos to the playoffs.
Oh,
like, I mean, I'm not saying he's Aaron Rodgers, but like,
right,
we got to cut him some slack here. I should mention too, he's been training as a professional athlete. Oh, by the way, Rico Gathers. Not sure if you heard of him. Had never played tight end. One off season, then he's with the Cowboys. Antonio Gates, Tony Gonzalez, on and on and on. So the
Antonio Gates played basketball, right, for Kent State, I believe.
Yes, that's the point I'm trying to make, is that this isn't unprecedented.
And what 10 years is unprecedented, though.
And what I would also say, Arnie, here's the other thing. Let's stop acting like the best person gets every single job in the NFL.
Right.
Guys get cut all the time because of contractual things, not because they're not good enough, but there's
something. Or money. Sometimes you got to save the money and go with the lesser guy.
Or the opposite. You draft a guy and you're paying a lot of money and he got to get paid. Or you got to play him, excuse me. Zach Wilson, I don't know if he's one of the best 32 quarterbacks on the planet.
Right.
I can guarantee you, God forbid, unless there's an injury, which we all obviously no one hopes for an injury. If there's not an injury, Zach Wilson is starting week one. He will be one of 32 NFL starting quarterbacks in week one. It doesn't make him one of the 32 best quarterbacks on the planet. So let's stop getting all worked up because this guy is going to have a chance to make a roster spot.
I think Rob Parker said it was the ultimate white privilege that Tebow's been given this chance. No, it's the ultimate in friendship privilege is what it is.
Well,
it has nothing to do with your race or anything like that. And people keep bringing up Kaepernick. He's not signing him as a quarterback. That's the first thing. And two, you know what the relationship is between Urban and Tim Tebow. We don't have to spell that out for you, Aaron.
100%. And this is another thing that anyone that has ever worked in the workforce knows. When a new boss comes in any job, I have experienced it in the corporate world. I'm sure you've experienced it in the corporate world. When a new boss comes in, they bring in their people. They bring in the people that know them, the people that they trust, the people to work under them, the people to, in Urban Meyer's case, help build the culture. Now, listen. We had Bucky Brooks Hour 1. Go back and listen if you didn't, because Bucky is amazing.
Yes, he is.
And Bucky said straight up, he said, you know, it's not going to fracture the locker room unless he is clearly not worthy of a roster spot and he gets one. And so, yes, some of this is on Urban Meyer, where you can't just bring him in and hand him something that he doesn't deserve. But the idea that it's inconceivable that he could get a shot to make a roster, I don't get it. I don't get why everyone's so worked up. I really don't.
You know, Urban Meyer hired that one coach that he had to fire with, the strength and conditioning coach.
Chris Doyle, yep.
He now is doing the Tim Tebow thing. And I you can't base it on two things, but is Urban Meyer maybe a little bit over his head, or is Urban Meyer still have that college mentality when he needs to have that professional mentality? I'm not sure, or am I reading too much into that?
So over his head, I don't believe so, but I think it is fair to ask, you know, in college football, when you win at the highest level, There's not many people that Nick Saban has to answer to, that Dabo Sweeney has to answer to, that Urban Meyer had to answer to at Florida or Oklahoma or Ohio State. Excuse me. I don't know why I said Oklahoma State, but at Ohio State. But in the NFL, unless your name is Bill Belichick, you're not the star. It's the dudes in that locker room who are the star. And so I do think he kind of has this college mentality of I can do whatever I want and there are no consequences. And I do think he has to understand, dude, this is a different ball game now. Those guys don't care what you did at Florida or Ohio State. They're here to win and get paid and take care of their families. And you still have to prove yourself to that locker room.
Do you think you said he'll only be a distraction if he makes the team when he's not supposed to? He's almost a distraction now. Just in sports talk radio. People talk. When's the last time we talked about the third string tight end of any team, you know?
Absolutely. No.
Jeez. Can you just say, all right, he's a third string tight end, emergency quarterback, special teams. Now you're creating a position for him, then something like that.
I say that again. I didn't follow.
Well, you could give him three different jobs. He's a emergency quarterback. He's a backup tight end. He's on special teams. Now you're making him more valuable, so there's a reason why you could keep him around because he could play many different positions.
Absolutely, but he's still got to be able to contribute in some form or fashion. Yes. There's only 53 roster spots, and I do think that. Now, is it a distraction? That is a fair question because we are talking about it. Outside of Trevor Lawrence, he will probably be the most coveted media interview once training camp opens, but I would also flip it on the other way. Is it a bad thing that he's a distraction? Isn't that part of why he is there? Is to take some of, I don't want to say the pressure off of Trevor Lawrence, but yeah, you go to training camp day one, they're going to want to talk to Tebow, and if that takes even 1 ounce of pressure off Trevor Lawrence, doesn't that help a little bit?
If Trevor Lawrence went 20 out of 20 for 400 yards and 3 touchdowns, and Tim Tebow came in and went 1 for 1 with a touchdown, Tebow would get just as much press as Trevor Lawrence. Trust me on that. I mean, if Tebow comes in and takes over, like, inside the red zone and, you know, does some of those gadget plays, the press will eat it up alive. They love stuff like that. And the fans would love it, too.
See, here's my question. It's easy to say that, but I don't believe that's true, and here's why. Because, and correct me if I'm wrong, because, and I'm not trying to be sarcastic, like, I was not doing national sports talk radio when Tebow was last in the NFL.
Right.
But from what I remember, the Broncos season was crazy. But then he goes to the Jets. He goes to a few other places. I don't remember like Tebow mania being a thing with the Jets because he wasn't productive. It was the what's the right word I'm trying to look for with the Broncos, where first it was just the interest in it. Then he was winning games. Nobody knew how he was winning games.
Won 8 games in a row, I believe, right?
Yeah. So do you believe – so was he a distraction? Was he the first person that people talked to with the Jets once the season started?
Look, Tebow mania was always around. You know, even when he was with the Jets, wasn't that the year he took off his shirt? And everybody's like, oh, my God, this guy is ripped. I can't remember 10 years later, I remember a guy taking off his shirt. I'm embarrassed to say that, but we remember that to this day.
Sure.
Look, I mean, yeah, it was a long time ago. Can he still play after 3,000-plus days? We'll find out. I'm rooting for him, though. I'm a Tebow fan. I want to see him get in. I want to see him do well. I think it'd be a great story. I think he's a great guy. I don't know why people are rooting against him like it's some bad thing if he makes it into the NFL. I think it's a great story. And by the way, Jacksonville does need to sell tickets a little bit. I'll bet you this. I bet you Tim Tebow, if he makes the team, will have the second best-selling jersey on the team behind Trevor Lawrence. Who knows? Maybe even number one ahead of Trevor Lawrence. I don't know, but he does bring money to your team, you know?
Oh, there's no doubt about it. And so to me, I'm with you, first of all. He is, by all accounts, a great guy, a great human being. I thought it was very interesting that his former college teammate, Brandon Spikes, I don't know if you remember him, but he played for the Patriots. He played for a bunch of different teams. But he came out this week and basically
said... Was he in assisted living? No, I'm just kidding.
Wow, that's mean.
I'm kidding.
He's 30, mid-30s.
I'm just trying to say Tebow's old. Get it? Blah, blah, blah.
Yes, but... Brandon Spikes, and he got criticized on Twitter because everybody does, but he said, Tim Tebow will be an inspiration in any locker room. Trust me, I know. And so I think coming from a former teammate who played in the NFL, I thought that was a pretty telling thing for him to say. And so to me, it's an interesting dynamic because he has to play and be productive to have any kind of, I guess, leadership value. Because in my head, I'm sitting here thinking, if you're the practice squad tight end, nobody wants to hear you giving yay, rah, rah speeches in the locker room before the game. So he has to be productive. But to me, I think it's interesting, and I'm with you. I'm rooting for him. Do I think that he is definitively one of the 100 best tight ends and absolutely deserves a – like, no, but that's not what it's always about, right. And we all know that in
sports. You could give a rah, rah speech if you're the third string tight end. I remember there was a kicker for Vanderbilt, I think, was giving a rah-rah speech to their team.
And in all seriousness, this was an analogy that I made this week when I was talking about this with somebody, is we all learned by the end that Sarah Fuller was not the most qualified kicker on the campus of Vanderbilt University. But she was universally praised, universally loved. And by the way, I like that story because I understood, look, it's Vanderbilt. Your season's over. You do need a kicker. Give her a shot. I had no problem with it. But I'm also not going to get mad that Tim Tebow, who for the record has played in the NFL, won a Heisman, is a great, is a great football player in general. By the way, he has been training as a professional athlete. I know it's a different sport, but we just talked about Antonio Gates, Rico Gathers, whoever. So all I'm saying is people love the Sarah Fuller story when it was clear by the end that she was not the most qualified kicker on Vanderbilt's campus. I don't understand why we can't get behind Tim Tebow and root for him just the same way.
I agree with you. By the way, just a little side story. I was reading where obviously the Tampa Bay at New England game week 4 tickets through the roof. The best ticket already $12,000 just to get in the house, somewhere between $1,500 and $2,000. We're still 5 months, before that game. Do you know what the other four most expensive tickets are out of the top five? I'll give you a hint. You're probably going to want to go to the game. They're all in Las Vegas, 2, 3, and 4, and 5. Do you plan on going to a game out in Vegas to go see the Raiders or what? Have you been out there? You haven't. Well, obviously you haven't because they haven't had fans.
I think that was just a great way to tease that we got Bernie Fratto next segment.
Yes,
but it was funny. I was visiting my mom there a few weeks ago, and we actually did go to Allegiant Stadium. You couldn't get in, but I went to the Raiders team store, which is really cool, by the way. I did not know that, but I'll tell you, I mean, they were opening that stadium last year. As Bernie explained it, they basically didn't want to do limited seating because they didn't think it'd be fair to the season ticket holders. So I am really excited to see what that stadium looks like with 65,000 or whatever.
So you're going to go, right? You're going to go check out.
I don't think I can afford to go.
Yeah, well, get a press pass. True. Do that. But it is going to be a blast out there. Already people, out-of-state people, want to come see their team and go to Vegas for the weekend. You come in on a Friday, gamble, hang out Saturday, go to the pool, go to the game on Sunday, and you go home Sunday night, Monday morning.
I will tell you this really quick. I know we got to get to break. When that move was announced, and that was years ago now, the Raiders to Vegas, I said that is going to be one of the most successful moves in pro sports history because you have Raiders fans in Oakland that can now make a weekend of it. You have Raiders fans in Los Angeles that can make a weekend of it. You have the fans in Vegas that are obviously going to show up, and the road traveling fans are going to be insane. If you imagine living in Green Bay and week 16 in December, you see Vegas on the schedule. Who is not going to Vegas for that game, Arnie?
Oh, I love to go to Vegas.